So Sri Aurobindo speaks of three stages in the previous paragraph that we read yesterday. First is the process of contact. A long, long process in which you turn inward . Then you become Sayujya. You become united with the Divine. This is where the ego is destroyed. You unite here, ego is destroyed there. It's like electric current. Once you realize your unity here, ego falls down. Then the third step starts, you become the Divine Center, because this is gone and the force moves without any boundaries, without any blockade. Until this happens, the idea of personal effort persists. And you should not therefore be idle. You make the sense of effort a part of your own development. But this effort is to be turned inward, and inward outward, so that a balance is maintained in your being until the ego is abolished and there is a powerful instrument of the Divine in the world, which works in the world without boundaries, without bounds. But this is only one side of the force that works for perfection. The process of the integral yoga has three stages, not indeed sharply distinguished or separate, but in a certain measure successive. There must be first the effort towards at least an initial and enabling self-transcendence and contact with the Divine. The backward movement, inward movement. Next, the reception of that which transcends, that with which we have gained communion, into ourselves for the transformation of our whole conscious being. I spoke yesterday of the fountain. When you go near the Divine, there's a big fountain of Divine Consciousness. It bathes you as you return to it. Last, the utilization of our transformed humanity as a Divine center in the world. You realize the Jivatman in you, and then through that Jivatman, you allow the Divine Force to manifest. So long as the contact with the Divine is not in some considerable degree established, so long as there is not some measure of sustained identity, sayujya, the element of personal effort must normally predominate. But in proportion as this contact establishes itself, the sadhaka must become conscious that a force other than his own, a force transcending his egoistic endeavor and capacity, is at work in him. And to this power he learns progressively to submit himself and delivers up to it the charge of his yoga. Once you reach this point, then everything then becomes the responsibility of the archer. The bow remains the bow. The bow doesn't make an effort now to bring out the arrow, to fix it, to make the target and to shoot, because it can't do even if it tries. It never does. We are only trying to imitate the Divine in our ignorant way. we become the archer, as it were. We become the fixers of the target. We shoot it. But it's only like a monkey imitating man when he sees man doing something. If the man wears a cap, the monkey also wears a cap, but in his own clumsy manner. Similarly, we are only imitators. When we stop imitating, open ourselves to the divine goes on doing his work without any boundary. In the end, his own will and force become one with the higher power. He merges them in the divine will and is transcendent and universal force. He finds it thenceforward presiding over the necessary transformation of his mental, vital and physical being with an impartial wisdom and provident effectivity of which the eager and interested ego is not capable. It is when this identification and this self-merging are complete that the divine center in the world is ready, purified, liberated, plastic, illumined. It can begin to serve as a means for the direct action of a supreme power in the larger yoga of humanity or superhumanity, of the earth's spiritual progression or its transformation. There is always a question for every individual how to be helpful to the others, how to serve mankind. This is the answer. If you really want to serve mankind, this is the condition: abolition of egoism, allowing the Supreme Force to work through you as a divine center. Then all that you do will work for the unity of mankind, for the progression of mankind. You really help mankind. We continue now, which you read already. Always indeed it is the higher power that acts. You have seen already. All these forces actually the higher power. Always indeed it is the higher power that acts. Our sense of personal effort and aspiration comes from the attempt of the egoistic mind to identify itself in a wrong and imperfect way with the workings of the divine force. It persists in applying to experience on a supernormal plane the ordinary terms of mentality which it applies to its normal experiences in the world. It's actually a very refined way of saying that the ego is like a monkey which is imitating the forces of the higher force. It's a very refined way of saying. But actually it says that ego is like a monkey which simply imitates what is happening behind and applies the higher to the lower in its own way, which is done very clumsily. In the world, we act with a sense of egoism. We claim the universal forces that work in us as our own. We claim as the effect of our personal will, wisdom, force, virtue, the selective, formative, progressive action of the transcendent in this frame of mind, life and body. Enlightenment brings, when you turn backward, inward, when you are enlightened, then this enlightenment brings to us the knowledge that the ego is only an instrument. We begin to perceive and feel that these things are our own in the sense that they belong to our supreme and integral self. Integral self is the self which is both immobile and mobile at the same time, one with the transcendent. Not to the instrumental ego. Our limitations and distortions are our contribution to the working. What we are contributing is to weaken the force. we only, because of our egoism, the force which is coming from outside, which is powerful, we weaken it. So our limitations and distortions are our contribution. We contribute only by distorting, by limiting it, by weakening it. The true power in it is the divine's. When the human ego realizes that its will is a tool, its wisdom, ignorance and childishness, we then realize, in egoism we always say, I am now more mature, I am more experienced, I am really wise. So Sri Aurobindo breaks that wisdom and says, its wisdom is only ignorance and childishness. Its power is an infant's groping. Its virtue, a pretentious impurity. What I say is my virtue, it is only a purity which is pretentious, which doesn't exist. You pretend to be virtuous. Actually, nobody is virtuous unless this happens. All virtue, all claim to virtue is a pretense. Pretentious impurity. And learns to trust itself. The ego must learn to trust itself to that which transcends it. That is its salvation. The apparent freedom and self-assertion of our personal being, to which we are so profoundly attached. In our egoism we feel we are free. I decide myself what I am to do. It is my freedom. But this freedom is nothing but a most pitiable subjection to a thousand suggestions, impulsions, forces which we have made extraneous to our little person. Our ego, boasting of freedom, is at every moment the slave, toy and puppet of countless beings, powers, forces, influences in universal nature. The self-abnegation of the ego in the divine is its self-fulfillment. Its surrender to that which transcends it is its liberation from bonds and limits and its perfect freedom.